How many of you have been in a cave or have been spelunking? Anybody? A few of you. Okay. That's more than I thought. So this last week, I had a chance to go cave spelunking for the first time in my life. My husband and I were at a retreat in the mountains with the staff from Calvary Wellspring, and one of the days we decided to go to a hike to a bat cave. And now when I thought of bat cave, I thought, okay, there's just going to be this opening in the rock where you're going to be able to peek your head through. You'll be able to stay out in the light, but you'll just be able to peek your head through, maybe see some sleeping vampires, you know, bats. But not disturbing them, not waking them up, that kind of thing. So we got to the mouth of the cave, and I was not expecting what I saw. Instead of an opening, just put your head in. Instead, there was a trail map that showed that you actually hike through the cave, down ladders near streams, ending at a lake. And I was like, okay. So it was a cave that has not been fully explored, and one website called it a cave that still retains its secrets. Okay, I was like, okay, that sounds terrifying. So let me make a disclaimer. The only other time I've been in a cave was when I was in third grade, and it was this tour through a cave. They had stairs, they had railings, it was lit the whole way. I mean, it was great. It felt very safe. That was my only other cave experience, so this was a little worrying and troublesome when we got to this cave. First off, there's bats, which that's terrifying in and of itself. When you're walking in a dark cave and you're not sure where these little creatures are hanging out. But the other thing was, being the claustrophobic warrior that I am, the thought of hiking through a dark cave not knowing where we were going was a little unnerving. Well, undeterred, our group entered the cave and began walking through it. We had two cell phone flashlights for our group of 9 people. We walked, or more shuffled, inch by inch over rocks, under stalactites, avoiding holes, the little cell phone lights illuminating the otherwise pitch black darkness. The further we got from the entrance, the darker it became and the more ominous it became. We only made it about 10 minutes in, and then we decided to turn around because, well, we only had 2 cell phone lights, and we were only about a quarter of the way through this entire cave, and there was a 30-foot ladder that we had to down climb to the next section of the hike, and we thought the smartest decision would be to turn around. So all that to say, I cannot think of a better visual for our theme tonight of choosing light. This choice that we have between choosing darkness or choosing light. So this week we entered into chapter 9 of Ecclesiastes. In this chapter, the preacher gives us a look at both darkness and light. We see him giving a hard look at darkness, at death specifically, the one event that happens to us all according to verse 2. And then in verse 3, he calls it an evil that is done under the sun. And as he says in verse 12, it happens at a sudden time that we do not know or we cannot plan for. And when you think of darkness, picture in your mind this cave that I just described, the blacker than black that you cannot see through. No light, no idea where you are, no idea how to get anywhere else. Now, I hated the feeling when our group turned off our cell phone lights and we couldn't see anything around us, but I thought, how often in my spiritual life do I actually sit in a place like this? How often do I find myself wallowing, ruminating over past conversations, holding grudges against that person, believing lies, harboring anger, or letting this dark, evil world bring me to despair? If I'm honest with myself, I find that sometimes I prefer the darkness. I prefer to just sit in despair. I choose to become numb. And how often does this choosing of darkness stem from our minds, from our thought life? I mean, think about it. Who talks to you, yourself, the most? Yourself. We're constantly talking to ourselves when we wake up, when we drive to work, when we talk with friends. Even right now, you might be talking to yourself. And what are we saying to ourselves? Are we choosing light? Or are we choosing darkness? As you take inventory of your thought life, what are you saying? Is it true? Is it holy? Is it pleasing to God? Or are we succumbing to bitterness, to what is false? Are we speaking lies to ourselves? The Bible has a lot to say about our thought life. In our minds. For instance, it says in Colossians 3, "If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth." Or Romans 12, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." A lot of our spiritual lives and walk with God stems from the choice that we make in our minds. I found that as I look at choosing light or choosing darkness, we need to learn to talk to ourselves and not just listen to ourselves. I love that God gives us examples of what it means to talk to ourselves in Scripture. First, in Lamentations. This isn't normally a book you pick up to read, but there's a section in chapter 3 that I wanted to read to you guys that has been a source of comfort for me in really dark moments. The writer of Lamentations says this in chapter 3, "My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is. So I say, my endurance has perished, so has my hope from the Lord. Remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me." Here you can see, you can hear the darkness, the wandering in the cave without the light. How often have we been where he has said he is? Our souls not knowing peace, forgetting what happiness is, our hope perished. But then listen to what he says next. "But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him." The writer does an about face here, a 180. He begins talking to himself. He calls to mind, and what does he say to himself? He remembers who God is. He lists out these attributes of what is true about him, calling to mind truth and light. Another example we find is in the book of Psalms. In Psalm 42, the writer says this, "Why are you cast down, O my soul, and why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God." He is questioning his soul. Why are you cast down? Why are you in turmoil? And he again talks to himself. He tells himself, turn around, hope in God. I wish I learned this lesson quicker, and I wish it, you know, solidified easier than what it has been. And I realize that I'm not so quick to do that 180, that "but this I call to mind," this, "but this." I need to learn to talk to myself, to choose light, to turn from the darkness. Let's turn back to Ecclesiastes 9. In the midst of the darkness that the preacher is lamenting about, in verse 7, he says this, "Go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love." This is one of the many joyful interludes that we see in this otherwise bleak or sometimes more realistic than we wish book. The preacher here is choosing light in the midst of the darkness of reality in this world. Specifically, he starts his joyful interlude with the word "go" in verse 7. In Hebrew, this word means to walk. It's a verb. It's an active, imperative verb. And an imperative verb gives a command or an order. It's a verb that doesn't leave room for questions or discussion. The preacher here is essentially telling us to go. No questions asked, no discussion to be had. Other translations of the Bible say, seize life. Don't sit around, get up and live. This is a choice. The preacher is telling us to go. Choose the good, choose the light, choose joy. This is an action that we need to take. We cannot sit passively by and let our thoughts run rampant with darkness and lies. We need to choose to turn on the flashlight in the dark cave. In John 8, Jesus says, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Jesus is this light that we choose. He is like the cell phone flashlight in the cave. He is the way by which we see everything else. We will only find our way in this life because of his light. If we were to have been in the cave with our group without the light, there was no hope of getting out. We would not have been able to see in front of our faces. We would quickly trip on something or go down the wrong hallway. But with the flashlight, we could turn and move towards the light at the opening of the cave. In a similar way, Jesus is that light. Without him, we would be totally lost. There would be no hope. It is in his light that we can see our way out. His light is the one that illuminates our path. In Matthew 7, Jesus says, "Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. And those who find it are few." We have two ways, two paths, two directions, light or dark. The way of choosing light, to choose to see good, to choose to cling onto the promises of God, it's hard. Jesus says it's a narrow way. But what will we choose today? At this very moment, will we choose Jesus or will we choose every other way? As 30,000 Days says, if you would live life rich and full, you have to learn to choose light. There's a turning from shadow to sunshine, a turning of your eyes from the things that are tattered and torn, the things that are painful and bleak, to the one surefire source of all that is good, all that is love, all that is hope, Jesus. As we look to Jesus as our light, he also calls us to be a light to this world. In Matthew 5, Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." May we be women who illuminate this dark cave world with the light of Jesus. May we choose to go, as the preacher tells us, to go enjoy life, find joy in God, find joy in the small things, turning our gaze to eternity, to light, to Jesus. So as we continue, I have, God, I look to you on your tables. And I wanted to sing this song as kind of a response, as a prayer back to God, as a chance to talk to our souls, as it were. So in this song, feel free to sing along, or just let it be the prayer of your hearts.